Welcome back to the USCHoops.com college basketball podcast. This is the May 16th, 2022 edition. The USCHoops.com college basketball podcast is the original podcast covering the USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts, as well as at the USCHoops.com message board. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you left a review and gave us a five-star rating on the platform of your choice. As always, this is Chase, joined by Nick. Nick, how are you doing?
Doing great, Chase. Been a little while since we did one of these, so figured it'd be a good time to just discuss, kind of the recent news items, even though there hasn't been too much. So,
yeah, I completely agree. And yeah, this is only our second podcast in over a month. So we intended to do more during the off season. I think this really largely dictated by just kind of the lack of news which gone on with SC. In some ways unfortunate. And I guess maybe we could start there. Since I think we last podcast, we knew that Isaiah Mobley had entered his name in the NBA draft and had said he was signing with an agent. So that would exhaust his eligibility as a college player, even though he had theoretically two more years left. Since then, I don't think we discussed Drew Peterson, not surprisingly, put his name to the draft. And then without an announcement, when the draft deadline, the deadline to enter your name to the draft came, Boogie Ellis had entered his name as well. Both of them apparently entered their name without signing with an agent. Since then, we've learned that the NBA has announced that they've invited, 77 players to their NBA draft combine. That's almost a separate discussion. It's an interesting topic of what's the appropriate number of players to invite to a NBA draft combine, considering that there are 30 teams and there are two rounds of draft. So theoretically, there are 60 draft spots. This year's there's only going to be 58 because two teams had to forfeit picks for whatever violations of NBA rules. So there's only 58 picks. 77 guys got drafted. In addition to that, or not drafted, invited to the combine. In addition to that, and then a further 44, I believe, were invited to the G League combine. So the G League now has its own combine, which is interesting. So in total, between the two, NBA controlled leagues, the majors and the minors, you have something in the magnitude of about 120 players getting invitations to show up to combines. Three USC players, including Isaiah Mobley, who was invited and went to a combine last year and performed well, by the way, not well enough that he probably would have been drafted, but he performed well. None of them three were invited. I'm a little surprised that Drew and Boogie were not invited to the G League combine, considering that a former UCLA Bruin and I don't know if he's former or current LSU Tiger, Sharif O'Neal, the son of Shaquille O'Neal, got invited. Right. There are other legit players who didn't get invited to the G League combine. Isaiah Mobley, I'm assuming, may have been invited to that, or there was just a decision that he didn't need to be invited to a combine because he went to one last year and then returned to school. And maybe there was just not enough information warranting an invite. So anyway, that's a mouthful, but what are your takeaways from these three guys not getting any invitations to go to these formal workouts?
I'm not totally surprised. The lists were really big lists of guys invited to these combines. They were very broad. So I guess from that standpoint, you could justify them getting invited. I don't think any of them are going to get drafted personally. So it's just not really a huge shock to me. They don't really have NBA games per se. I think Boogie at least has NBA athleticism, he's just not a complete player yet as a lead ball handler, and it's just really hard to make the NBA as a primary ball handler these days. Those guys they're such good players. So not shocked by any of that news. I don't know if you want to get into it, but UCLA also had their roster's kind of getting finalized as well. And it seems like things are setting up pretty well for those guys next year as well.
Yeah. And so they Jules Bernard kind of did the same thing as Drew Peterson, and Boogie Ellis put his name in with a year of eligibility, same as Drew, with a year of eligibility remaining, just the bonus COVID season. Jules did get an invite to the NBA Combine. So you have to wonder, like, where, you know, the cutoff there. I'm not sure. I don't think Jules Bernard is a particularly great NBA prospect either. I actually think Drew Peterson is probably a better NBA prospect than Jules Bernard, even though I think Jules Bernard has really had some really great college games. He's, you know, he's not a super athletic guy, but in the college game, he can really excel. He's a shot maker. And when he's not in a slump, which he was for part of the last season, he can be really effective. But it seems like all these guys we're talking about, with the exception of Isaiah Mobley, are going to be returning to school. So Drew and Boogie returning to SC. Jules Bernard returning to UCLA to join a guy who did not enter his name into the draft, unlike Isaiah Mobley, Jaime Jaquez. I think everyone agreed that Jaquez had a superior draft prospects at the deadline than Isaiah Mobley and decided to come back. His sister is going to be a freshman on the UCLA girls team or ladies team next season. So that's certainly a big part of the factor. UCLA obviously also has Amari Bailey coming in. They have Adem Bona. And then David Singleton announced he was returning. That's a surprise to me. And then there's Jalen Clark. So they have a lot of talent coming back. Interestingly, so Cody Riley had a bonus season. He's not taking advantage of that. Doesn't surprise a lot of people because it actually would have been his sixth season at UCLA. He lost a season because of the China theft fiasco from years ago, if people can still remember that. So he's not taking advantage of that. And the other guys that have come back is Miles Johnson, which is, I think, surprise in the kind of cosmic sense. When you hear about the actual reasoning, he's information technology or engineering post-grad at UCLA, and has like basically been giving a job offer from IBM to go and work there. So it sounds like a really lucrative opportunity. It's a really great thing to have coming out of college, straight from college, without having to do any, you know, further graduate degree, spend more money in education. So he's going to do that. So he's not going to play basketball for UCLA next year. Nevertheless, I mean, UCLA is pretty stacked. I mean, they, you know, Jaime Jaquez, it's hard to find, you know, count five guys coming back to college basketball next year better than Jaime Jaquez. I don't think you can do it. And then in addition to that, you probably have Jules Bernard back. You have Amari Bailey coming in. You have Jalen Clark. So, and then obviously you've got Tiger Campbell back at point guard. Pretty stacked team for UCLA.
Definitely. Jaquez is like the big one, right? I mean, like he'll be preseason Pac-12 player of the year again, I think. I think he was this past year, but yeah, he'll get that again. And you know, we'll see, like, the other guy in that conversation would be Azulis Tabellis, right? Or maybe like Dalen Terry, if he comes back. But
yeah, I don't think the only one who I think would have been legitimately in the conversation with Jaime Jaquez would have been if Jabari Walker came back for Colorado. And basically, yeah, he hasn't made it formal yet, but it sounds like he's staying in the draft.
Right. So here's a question. What do you make of Jaime Jaquez going back to UCLA for a fourth year while Isaiah Mobley does not go back to USC for a fourth year, even though his dad's on staff?
Yeah, so it's a really fascinating question. One of the interesting wrinkles here is both Jaime and Isaiah Mobley had injuries this past season.
Mm-hmm.
I almost think the nature of their injuries, though, are such that it kind of helped dictate their decisions in a way. Jaime Jaquez had like a lingering ankle injury that just kind of never got fully healed, even though I have to say by the end of the season, until he re-injured it at the end of the the Toledo game or the game afterwards, right before the North Carolina game, he re-injured it. He was playing great, you couldn't tell he was injured. Although, for example, when UCLA played SC at Galen, Jaime did almost nothing, and it seemed very clear he was injured. He had this kind of lingering injury that kind of lasts all year. It was to it was to his ankle. It's like one of these things that's an annoyance. He probably felt that at different points during the season that he's better than he's showing. Conversely, Isaiah Mobley started out hot. He was healthy. He looked great. He got his body in great shape. And then two-thirds of the way in the season, he gets smacked in the face, breaks his nose, suffers apparently concussion-like symptoms, and doesn't. When he comes back, he's just not the same player. I think for Isaiah Mobley, his calculus is probably built around a couple ideas like, hey, my brother's in the NBA already. Maybe he's gotten some sort of vague promises from Cleveland that they'll bring him into the franchise. I don't know. I mean, that's been speculation, but who knows if that's true or not. But he might be thinking, look, I put all this effort into last season. I did all this work. I improved my jumper, all this stuff. You know, I was shooting great. I was looking great. One freak thing happens in a game against Arizona, and a lot of it seemed to go out the window. And I had, due to no fault of my own, regressed as a player back to what I was as a sophomore. I couldn't hit the threes any longer. I wasn't able to score as consistently around the basket. So I think that's part of the calculation for him. There's always just the factor of like, hey, look, these are different guys with going through different things and different aspects of lives, you know, just Jaime is in a situation where sister's coming onto campus. He was right in that range of late second round where he most likely would have been taken at the end of the second round, but not necessarily as a guarantee.
Yeah.
And he has the opportunity to kind of just legitimately make NIL money, not through some like sort of, you know, scheme, but like authentically just through, you know, getting endorsements where he'd probably make a few a few hundred thousand dollars. I think Johnny Juzang this season, it came out that he was making in the range of 500,000. I would not be surprised if, given some of the numbers we've seen that, you know, and then now that UCLA actually has an NIL collective, I would not be surprised if Jaime is closer to $1 million next season. So he might think, you know, this to me, it's not a big deal. Some of it's luck. I don't know how much of it is a reflection on the program. I do think, like, legitimately, if Isaiah Mobley had come back, SC, I mean, they were being listed like top 15 by a lot of the prognostications. And then that went out the window when he decided to leave. So he may be thinking, okay, well, I'm not sure if we're like legitimately going to make the next step next season. There's more news on SC that may could have potentially influenced that. I mean, as you start to put the SC roster together, there, you know, we've talked about it before. There's these two holes in the roster, which are the point guard and now Isaiah's position. If Isaiah had stuck around and thought, oh God, all we need is a point guard and we're rolling. We're ready to go. We're going to be as good as anybody. Even could be competitive with, defending national champion or defending runner-up North Carolina, based upon, you know, UCLA basically had them beat and kind of just gave the game away. So I think it may be a reflection on the states of the program, but it might just be a fluke thing. So that's where I come down to this. What are your thoughts on that?
I kind of just think that it was predetermined from the beginning of the season that he was going to go pro, and that like nothing that could have happened this year would have changed that. Like, the reason I say that is because he's like legitimately going to be, barring a under the table deal with the Cavs to draft him, I don't think he's going to get drafted. So he's legitimately going to be making less money in the G League next year than he would from NIL in college. So, and I don't think his quality of life is going to be better in, you know, the G League playing in these random cities with no crowds than in college basketball. So my sense is that he was just ready to move on. It was predetermined, and really nothing this year could have influenced that decision. That's my take on it.
I think that's right. I think the only thing that could have influenced it would have been like, if he just started the season was absolute crap for some reason. And then just seemed like, hey, I have no chance at all of getting drafted, but he started the season so strong that that wasn't really an issue. What about the flip side of it, of the Juzang side of things? Not Juzang, so Hawkins side of things.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of interrelated, right? I think UCLA had to lose one of Paquez or Juzang, and I think Juzang kind of had the same mindset as Isaiah Mobley, as like it was predetermined that he was going to go after the season, no matter how the season shook out, because he was really close to going after last year, right? Like both of those guys were very late decisions to even pull out of the draft last year. I think they were made on like the last day. So I think they're really in the same boat. It's just predetermined. It's going to leave college. And Jaquez, I think he just wanted to, I think he just genuinely loves UCLA and wants to play, you know, with his sister there. He's going to make $1 million. I mean, I think that's, you know, I don't think his draft stock will really diminish by staying another year if he just does the exact same thing, right? Like at this point, like, yes, he is what he is, right? But at the same time, like, if he just does a repeat of this past season, next season, I still think that gets him drafted. And, you know, if you look at his shooting percentages over his 3 years, I think there's a very real case that he'll up his 3-point percentage to be more consistent with his freshman and sophomore years. And that might get him into the first round.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And that all could happen. And the one area that he wasn't, when he finally came back strong toward the very end of the season, he didn't come back super strong on 3-point shooting. So even though his interior score, and look, the other factor here is I really think this is like, not, it's not stressed enough. Like for a guy like Jaime Jaquez, there's only so many opportunities he's got left to be like the best player on the court. Like when he steps onto a basketball court, he's going to be the best player. He's going to dominate. The moment he gets into like the G League, if he has to go to the G League, I mean, I'm hoping he, you know, he doesn't, he just goes straight to the NBA. But if he's in the NBA, he's in the G League, either one, he's never going to be the best player on the court. That's just not who he is. You know, so it's for him, it's like a cool experience and a cool opportunity. What are your thoughts about Miles Johnson taking off?
I think that's just really cool. I mean, like, good for that guy. I mean, like, I can't remember a kid in the last several years that, you know, was in like a grad, like engineering grad degree program at a top 20 school, 20, 25 school or whatnot, and really just buying into the, you know, academic aspect of it. So he seems like a really quality kid and, you know, has a great job offer. So just props to him for pursuing that. And like, I think he's a really good player. Like he's not an NBA player or a pro or anything like that. Like, you know, maybe he can get a cup of coffee in Europe, but like that guy's a legitimately awesome rebounder and defender. And UCLA, I think, really could have used him next year. And if there's any question about that team, I think it's certainly about their interior depth. So,
yeah, I completely agree. And by the way, I think because of that now and the Cody Riley decision, they do have one open scholarship. I think they're running into a little bit of the same situation USC has, which is trying to see, is it worth taking an extra player or is it going to upset the apple cart? So I guess we can dive into this a little bit with SC and then we'll talk about recruiting in a bit.
Sure.
From what I've been told, it sounds like we're standing pat on the point guard situation. And really, the roster finalization will come if we can find a four-man to plug in to the current roster, which is, look, I think it's going to be, that's a tremendous disappointment to me, too. I think probably to Nick, even though we haven't specifically discussed it, but it's, you know, completely contrary to everything we've been preaching for months at this point. We're years now removed from, you know, Jordan McLaughlin being the point guard for USC. Obviously, SC has been kind of in search of that true point guard. SC had a great guard last season in Tajidi, but he wasn't really the point guard. He would have been amazing matched with a true point guard. I think he would have scored even more points. And there was hope that maybe Boogie would get closer to that. That's clearly not the case. And that's just objectively by the numbers you can look. He's not really functioning as a true point guard. Not that to say that he's not a valuable player, just he's not functioning as a true point guard. And the hope was, gosh, we just fill in that hole in the roster. It's a glaring hole. Everyone's got to see this. You got to understand that this is the problem. If it means that Boogie Ellis has come off the bench, that's what it means. And yet it seems like we are not going to be doing this, not going to be bringing in that point guard to kind of close that roster hole. And we're going to rely on the current players, the current guards, including Kobe Johnson, to take on some role as a point guard. We even the program ran like release a video last week of the freshmen and Chavez Goodwin, like praising all the freshmen. Now look, plenty of praise is due upon Reese Waters, and you can definitely give praise, I think, certainly to the defensive efforts that we saw from Kobe Johnson, but he's like praising, you know, giving further and further praise to Malik Thomas and Harrison Hornery. Almost as though, like, hey, try to send like the subtle message, like, don't worry too much about getting players from the transfer portal. We're good. We would prefer to play use of the players that we have already. Anyway, before we address the four-man position, let's talk about that. No new point guard, it seems, coming in.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there were plenty of options in the portal, and they pursued some of them, maybe a little bit. It didn't seem like they were actively all in for any point guard out of the transfer portal than any particular player. I don't think they were like deep on. So it seems like they kind of actively made the decision not to pursue a point guard out of the transfer portal. What's interesting about that, right, is we were hearing that Boogie Ellis would not be on the team next year and that they were going to stick with Ethan Anderson. It ended up being the flip of that. And then they keep Boogie Ellis and kind of put him in a primary role. So I just don't really understand a lot of the logic, right? Like, it'd be one thing if, you know, the message coming out of the season was, we love Boogie, we think like Boogie can make another step, we're going to rock with him as our guy, but that wasn't really the message. And now they kind of are, but in a way they're doing it by choice and not pursuing a point guard. So I'm not exactly like sure, like everything that kind of went on there behind the scenes. I do think like, if you want to be optimistic about it, the rotation of Boogie, Reese Waters, and potentially Kobe this, you know, for next year, I think will be an upgrade over our rotation this past year of Boogie, Ethan Anderson, and, you know, the spot minutes, I guess, that Kobe played, right? So I think like we will like actually be better at guard next year, but it does seem like we left something on the table too.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, that's correct. And, you know, you can go by personnel, right? Because you say, okay, look, we're down Ethan Anderson. I mean, I guess you could say we're down Max if you consider him a guard or not. Mm-hmm. But, you know, all the current players are getting a year older. Plus, we're bringing in
Uzziah, Trey White, right?
Yeah, Trey White and Uzziah Sellers, Trey White in particular, who looks like he's going to be a really good player. So, like, yeah, I mean, that situation is going to improve overall, but it doesn't really like address like the on the nose issue of like, hey, it'd be great to have a point guard, especially since you're getting like the situation, like so this kind of now ties into the situation going on with the four man, because it's not as like, if we got like a really stellar point guard to go on this team, you could almost fill in that four man position with like just a guy who could kind of a role player who kind of do the role. Even though we've lost Isaiah Mobley, even though we've lost Chavez Goodwin, you know, the guys we have coming in, combined with, okay, Joshua Morgan coming back, getting a year older, and you have one more guy who's just like an adult in the room, like an experienced player that can get the job done. If you have that point guard, it takes a lot of the pressure off. You know, all you need from those positions and the down low is like just kind of dunks and them playing defense and rebounding. You don't need like a real, like true create your own shot type scorer. But if you're lacking a point guard, that means almost all five players on the court have to be like their own, they have to initiate their own offense in some level, right? Or puts more pressure on them to initiate their own offense. So that puts more pressure at every position. And then you take a guy like Uchukwu, who has looked really good in some of these all-star games, these postseason all-star games, and you think, well, look, if you put him with a really good point guard, you can run pick and roll, he can get to the rim and he can dunk it, and he can really be an effective player. But if you're putting him in the position where you got to just toss the ball down to him in the post and like try to have him score, you know, in a post-up game, well, in that case, he's going to struggle. So all of these little issues, they affect other issues. And I think because of this, you almost need to bring in a four-man who could score on his own, like initiate his own offense. And I don't know if we're going to be able to do that. It's hard to get a four-man who's can really initiate his own offense. And we've been pretty, it's pretty clear that when the five-man jumps into the portal, we have not shown a lot of interest. So talking about like Abigidi or Gay for Washington State, we're basically like hands off on those guys. There's rumors that like maybe University of Washington might be a favorite for Abigidi. Well, I mean, I think SC could out recruit Washington, hopefully, for a player like him, but we haven't shown any interest at all. So it's like the players that we have shown interest for in that spot have been Julian Phillips, who, the incoming freshman, who it demanded a gigantic NIL package and is signing with Tennessee as a result, basically in a bidding war between Auburn, Tennessee, and the G League. And Bobby Clintman, who was like I think over time will be an effective four-man, but he's clearly not like a college ready five. He's like a four-man, you know, a guy who can hit threes like Julian Phillips. So to me, it appears that like we're not willing to just take another big and slot him into that four spot. We're looking for somebody who can like, I guess, hit three pointers, but also rebound. And I'm not sure we're going to find that guy.
So Chase, I think the people are wondering, what is your take? Why did we not recruit Efe Abigidi? You could throw Oshun Oshuniyi from St. Bonaventure in that mix too, right? He's going to Iowa State.
Yeah.
He was like potentially rumored to be a package deal with Kyle Lofton, who's now going to Florida. So they weren't actually a package deal, but that kind of screamed to me like, whoa, okay, you can go get one of the best shot blockers in the country and get a point guard to go with it. I guess my take on that situation is they just don't want another five, right? Like they view Vince as a five.
Yeah, they clearly don't want another five. And look, we didn't pursue Jalen Graham either, right?
Right.
Who's Jalen Graham is arguably a non-five four-man who just can't really shoot threes. Like the interesting guy is Muhammad Gay, another transfer out of Washington State. Who actually does shoot threes a little bit, even though he looks and plays a lot like a five, but he can shoot a little bit of threes, but we don't seem to be as interested in him either. I wonder if there's an aspect of this that we're afraid about scaring off recruits. We have guys slotted in to certain spots and we're worried about, you know, getting a big name that's another big that's going to cluster things down low. I mean, look, we do have two legitimate seven footers in Morgan and
Vince, Chukwu. Right?
Yeah. So yeah, that's my guess. There's another possibility, but it's every time I throw this out there, it seems like I just prove myself to be an idiot, which is, oh, there's some other plan involved, but I don't know what that other plan is. I mean, the funny thing is even the Clintman thing, I thought that like could have been a potential, you know, area where, oh, we may be onto something. Maybe we're going to go after this kid. You know, he might not be ready at the beginning of the season, but by the end, who knows? I mean, he's kind of an interesting prospect and he goes to like Wake Forest. So I'm not sure how much we pursued him either.
Right.
So I can't quite figure it out. There are guys currently, there are guys that are seniors on their own team that have never entered the transfer portal, but could still transfer because they would be grad transfers. I don't know if any of those will materialize. Then there are guys who are still are in the transfer portal, but are part of the, you know, have entered the NBA draft and not withdrawn it yet. Those are going to be very, those are players that are going to be very competitive to try to get someone like that. I can't say that I think we'll do it. We'll pull any of these guys out because we've just been so passive during this period. It's hard to understand exactly what we're doing. So I don't know. Do you have a theory?
So I've got a theory on the bigs. I don't have a theory on the guards. So my theory on the bigs is, right, they view Abagidi is a five, right? And they think, okay, we already have two fives. Kajani Wright is kind of a five too, right? Like, you know, he can maybe stretch the floor a little bit with his shooting, but like, you know, he's, you know, if you're playing him with, you know, Vince or with Josh, you're playing two bigs essentially, right? So I think they just didn't want another big to clog up the lane that, you know, can't shoot threes. So I think, right, like you look at Alex Fudge is more of a four. They pursued him. Bobby Clintman is more of a four. So I think they just don't want another straight center with Morgan and Iwuchukwu and Kajani Wright on the roster. So I think, you know, agree with it or not. Like, I think Abagidi is kind of similar to Isaiah Mobley in a way. Like, I think as a shooter, he's a good foul shooter. He hasn't really shown the ability to stretch the floor much yet from three, but I think like the indicators are there where you can bet on him, like stretching the floor, you know, being able to hit a mid-range J and kind of fill the Isaiah Mobley role. He's obviously not as gifted of a passer, but he's a better rim protector and he's a very good rebounder. So I think like, you know, that might just be a difference in evaluation between like what I see in him and what the coaching staff sees in him. And like, that's totally fair, right? The guard situation, I just don't understand. So we, you know, reach out to Talon Cooper, the Morehead State guy, who wasn't really, I don't think he's really a high major player. So like, you know, by doing that, you're clearly indicating some interest in a guard, right? But then you don't reach out to Kendrick Davis, and like, we weren't going to win that recruitment anyway. So it doesn't like change the end result. But I'm not sure of the strategy there. And then, you know, you add in the fact that, you know, there was clearly noise that they weren't happy with Boogie Ellis. And now they're kind of going all in on Boogie Ellis and not trying to find a replacement. So the big situation, I think you can explain it just with the logic that they don't want another five. They think they have enough fives. And if, you know, a guy is a non-shooter at the forward position, they're just not going to take him. That kind of makes sense to me on paper. But with everything that went on with kind of Ethan Anderson, Boogie Ellis, and the way that all shook out, I just don't understand why they're not getting a guard. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think totally makes sense. And one more piece to this. Now, I should say, because, you know, it doesn't make sense to me, although I've been told things. So I've been told, you know, look, it's politically not tenable to move Boogie out of starting position. Okay. They don't want to play Drew Peterson at the four. Okay. So that leaves a kind of like, there's a player crunch there, right? Because you also can't have Reese Waters coming off the bench again. You need him starting.
Yep.
Okay. So now you've got like basically three wings, right? You've got Boogie, Reese Waters, and Drew Peterson. And you don't want to play any of these wings at the four. So you need to play these guys at the one, two, three. Okay. So that kind of, it creates, it's a situation that's creating its own problems. You need to have these three starting. You need to have, you know, I think to me, the solution would be just start Drew at the four. And go get your point guard. You know, that'd be my solution. But you know, I'm not there and I don't fully understand the politics, but that's how it's been presented to me. One other thing I think worth mentioning here is if we can't figure out what we're doing with this four man spot, why were we so quick to run off Max? Max is someone who could actually have been valuable in that role. Now, the problem is he can't hit his threes. I mean, that's kind of like his big Achilles heel, right? I mean, he's got dribbling issues, but if you just played him at the four, you're like, okay, he can kind of play the defense. He rebounds well enough. You can get away with the rebounding and stuff, and he adds enough interior offense. The problem is, he can't stretch the floor, but still I'd rather have him than not have him. And I don't know if like, who's the replacement for him going to be. I'm assuming our intention is still to bring in that four, but it just seems very unclear. And there was a discussion. Now this didn't materialize, But there was a discussion of Eric Williams, the one-time Duquesne player who played for Oregon the last couple seasons and who transferred again. He was going to visit San Diego and was then going to visit USC, which presumably he would have taken that spot. And between Max and Eric Williams, the only thing Eric Williams really does better is shoot threes. And not even like in a really material way, because if you look at like true shooting percentage between the two players, I think Max was clearly higher. So you'd be giving up a lot of interior shooting for a guy who can shoot, you know, basically average three. He's a decent rebounder, but it would have been, I mean, to make that kind of trade in your roster, give up Max to bring on Eric Williams, it to me does not make sense. Now, it's not happening because Steve Lavin, being the recruiter Steve Lavin is, along with the former USC coach, Behar.
Behar.
They got him to go to University of San Diego, which, by the way, that's a big get for a program like that. So props to them. Absolutely. Major recruit there. But the point is, we were like, seemed like interested in bringing him in. That's, to me, scary. And like, if we're going to do that, why give up on Max? That's just my thought.
So, okay. My response to that, which kind of has, you know, some validity, I think, and some, you know, I think that if you look at our personnel over the last couple of years, Andy's been hesitant to go small at the floor, right? So even in the UCLA game, when Max was, you know, or when Jaquez was cooking Isaiah, right? Like, we went big, right? In those lineups where Isaiah was playing the four and guarding Jaquez, right? And then Max did a much better job guarding Jaquez at the four spot. But we didn't really use Daniel Utomi at the four back when we had him. We played two bigs and had Nick and Big O on the floor together, which was obviously not an ideal pairing. Both of them are fives. And I think we would have done well to, you know, play Utomi as a stretch big. And then right this past year, I think we played a lot of Isaiah at the four and we're hesitant to go to Isaiah at the five. Right. So, you know, in theory, if you're sticking with that logic of Andy doesn't like playing small guys at the four or non-bigs at the four, then you would think, okay, maybe they didn't view Max as a four. They viewed him as a three, and he would clog up minutes with Drew and Reese and Kobe and all that. I think where that breaks down is that, okay, if that's the case, then, you know, why are we like, what are we doing with the bigs, right? Like, if we're going to play two bigs and he'd use Kajani Wright as a four, right, then why wouldn't we try to get another big at the five to replace Isaiah, right? Because you've only got Vince and Morgan, and you've got some minutes there. If you view Kajani as a full-time four, then, you know, you clearly, like, have room for another rim protector, in my opinion. Like, maybe they see Morgan and Vince playing 40 minutes a game combined, and maybe that's what they're going with, but I don't know. That was kind of my initial reaction.
Right, but then how do you account for the
four, right?
Yeah, so how do you account for the Eric Williams thing?
Yeah, that's just weird. And maybe Eric Williams was never a take, right? And that's why he went to USD. Like, maybe there was just some additional due diligence done on that.
Right. It also is possible, because there were only a couple tweets about this, maybe only one. It's definitely possible there could have been like mixed signals, and someone said, we're looking at, you know, San Diego, USD. And someone thought they said USC, but San Francisco, California, and USD or whatever. So,
I guess there's also the case that Eric Williams is a better 3-point shooter than Max, right? Like,
yeah,
maybe they just wanted the floor spacing and the 3-point shooting. And like, Eric Williams, if you look at his first couple of years at Duquesne, like, they were high major good. I mean, like, I think
yeah, his sophomore season, yeah, he was like a real big, really nice get for Dana Altman when he got him. And then there were moments where he's looked really good. In fact, the beginning of this past season, he looked really good again. Yeah. And then over time, it's like the real problem that he starts to run into is like a real slasher type player. and he gets to the interior and he just can't hit it. He can't finish. He gets high major competition on the interior. That's really the problem he runs into.
Right. So like maybe like it's a bet that he returns to kind of a sophomore year form. And cause like that player is high major good. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I think like Williams' sophomore year was probably better than Max's year this past year, just because of the shooting and the offensive game. So like, you know, I think if you compare Williams's senior year, I guess, to Max's junior year, I think Max was clearly better in spite of the shooting struggles, but that might be the thought process there. So I don't know. I don't think like Max is a drastically better player than Eric Williams. When you factor in the shooting, like, I think it's close. So like you could justify it. I wouldn't go that route, because I also think that, you know, there still is some shooting projection with Max. Like if Max goes out and shoots 37% from three at Wyoming, I wouldn't be shocked. Like I'd be surprised, but I think that's definitely like within the realm of possibility.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. Okay. Well, I guess we can talk a little bit about the recruiting situation. So the big recruiting news for SC was a couple of recruiting things, but the big one we should talk about first is Isaiah Collier, who we've discussed on the podcast. We really, when Romer was on, we went into depth about him and how strong of a point guard he is. Now, he visited this past week, he visited both USC and UCLA back to back. After the UCLA visit, he posted a whole bunch of pictures on Instagram of his fun times at UCLA in a UCLA uniform, holding some of the national championship trophies. SC doesn't have a whole bunch of those national championship trophies for basketball. So he didn't post anything after the SC visit.
Chase, we got it. We got an update. He just did post within the last few hours about the USC visit.
So. Oh, there we go. Okay, well that's
there good. It is. Yeah.
You know what? It takes longer to develop. Takes longer to develop those pictures.
Right.
By the way, it's funny because I'm sure there are people who are listening have no idea what I'm talking about. But you know, in the old days, photographs had to go through like you know, dark room and get developed. Anyway, okay, so. I don't know how on the surface, there's so much about this Isaiah Collier recruitment that says like UCLA is just tagging along. And even when you're reading these great proclamations from like Tracy Pearson, it smells so much like his like overestimating UCLA chances for any number of recruits that he always does and kind of just diminishes SC's chances. On the other hand, gosh, SC has really just not been able to find that point guard for years now. So Leon, let me ask you this question before we talk about Isaiah Collier. If we could rewind the clock a year and we had the same choice to make about KJ Simpson, what would you do?
Is the question, would I have taken KJ Simpson?
Yeah, after he came into Arizona.
Yes, I would have taken KJ Simpson. I think he's a really good player. I think he's got a lot of passing ability, and he can be an all Pac-12 point guard maybe as soon as next year as a sophomore. So, like, yeah, I'm taking that guy 100%. Yeah. Do I think Isaiah Collier is a better prospect at the same stage? Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, obviously the difference is he's not on your roster yet and he's a lot harder to get. Okay. So let's talk about Collier. What are your thoughts here with UCLA? And then there's, you know, all these people behind the scenes saying, well, they think Cincinnati's going to get him. What are your thoughts?
Yep. Yeah. I'm concerned. And like, part of it is the Julian Phillips recruitment. Like, we didn't even really get a second look there. I mean, like, I guess we did and we didn't, right? But we were not like a finalist the second time around. Like that was Auburn and Tennessee, right? Yeah. Like I think there's no doubt those were the two schools he was picking from, and that's an NIL thing. So that makes me like really concerned about our NIL. If like we couldn't even, like we recruited him longer than Auburn. Auburn just jumped in, you know, basically outbid us immediately. I don't even know if we bid on him or what our NIL deal is, but we've got lots of pieces of tangible evidence here. The Phillips recruitment, where our NIL was clearly insufficient. You know, Isaiah Mobley going pro, like, you know, I'm not saying that's all NIL related by any stretch, but you know, if we, you know, would have been able to throw $1 million at him, I'm not sure that I
think the Isaiah Mobley thing might have been a separate deal, because
it could have very well could have.
That's like, if there was one guy who they could have gotten the money for, it would have been him, because he's so popular amongst a lot. I mean, people know who he is, right? There's no, like, it's not like a question of, like, if you go to like your typical SC, you know, rich donor, they're not going to know any basketball players. And you say Julian Phillips, I'm like, who the hell is that? But if you say, oh, Isaiah Mobley wants to come back, they're going to know who Isaiah Mobley is. Everybody knows who he is. I mean, he was, you know, he was the guy that scored whatever 25 points against Kansas in the, you know, or whatever it was. So I think, the concerns about NIL were very legitimate. So let me tell you a little bit what I know about this.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So, and this is coming from different sources over time, the plan going back to the fall of 2020, so not this past fall, but the previous fall, where they knew California had passed this NIL law. They knew Florida had as well. Now, as California law is actually not ready to kick in until 2023. So things might have transpired faster than they were ready for. But the Boulevard campaign is largely built around the concept of trying to of selling SC as an NIL, institution, for lack of a better term. And that was like that came now, obviously, you know, the initial commercial had to be withdrawn because of COVID and all this stuff. But that was the plan. And I think it still is to use Boulevard for that purpose and have it run at some level through the university. Last spring, a year ago now, is when the decision in NCAA versus Alston came down. And just so people understand, that case did not involve NIL directly. It involved benefits relating to education that student athletes were allowed to receive. I think principally during their postgrad, but I think also during their undergrad. And it was like, what kind of benefits would be available to them? And the court smacked the NCAA down pretty hard. Now, in the main opinion, they basically just said, look, your entire regime of restricting compensation or benefits going to student athletes is suspect. Certainly the restrictions on this, like these education benefits, are foreboding. This is antitrust 101, you know, and they did their antitrust analysis and said, look, you guys, whatever you're claiming here for trying to preserve, you know, whatever you're, you know, being pro-competitive is the term, you know, be promoting competition, it doesn't satisfy the test. In a concurring opinion that Brett Kavanaugh drafted, and he drafted not because he wanted in any way to undermine the underlying opinion, but he wanted to really broaden the scope and say, look, I want to draft more generally to talk about all benefits, including name, image, and likeness, and say in the future, every single time there is going to be a test of whether or not some NCAA rule or regulation limiting benefits to athletes comes up, you're going to be facing a very, very, very difficult test. And I mean, really slammed them hard. Well, I mean, almost immediately afterwards, the NCAA's reaction was basically to throw up their hands and say, you know what, Wild West, free for all, NIL is permitted, you guys figure out your own rules.
Yeah.
It's only been within the last week or so where the NCAA is trying to now rein that in. I think they're going to have a lot of problems, by the way, and that's
good luck.
And I'll post about that on the site. I posted about that on Ryan Abraham's board. The point being, SC had its plan doing things through the Boulevard and trying to have some sort of controls in place and not go wild on the SC side. I'm not entirely sure if this was just a power thing or if they're like, look, we've had NCAA problems in the past. We have a lot of money floating around here. We just want to be careful. That could be the case. Obviously Caleb Williams, when he shortly after committing to SC, announced he had this gigantic deal from Beats. And I think other deals like that are readily available. And then there's the whole Jordan Addison situation, which I think everyone knows about. I have been told that there are groups of donors wanting to form their own collectives. At least one of them has 8 figures behind him of cash, looking to do NIL deals, and the university saying, no, we're not doing it that way. We're not doing this collective free for all. And I think they're probably going to stick with that given what the NCAA is trying to do. So that's going to present restrictions, and you're going to see them materialize here and there. That all being said, I think when you, and this is what I dealt with and I talked about in the last podcast, when you're dealing with a player like Julian Phillips, one of the problems is you're going to have to kind of get, you're going to need to kind of like more legitimacy. You can't just do these like bidding wars that like a lot of other schools are doing where they're just like, hey, let's bid this player up, even though there's no local name recognition. Now, I understand that's what everyone says was done with Jordan Addison, but you put a Blitnikoff winner with Caleb Williams on a USC football team, believe me, this guy's going to be a star the moment he walks on the field. So there's no question there. But when it comes to a basketball player, even a basketball player who is a prospective lottery pick, if he has no local name recognition, it's a little bit harder to find that NIL situation present. Hopefully, you know, I referenced this with Robert Dillingham in the past. SC, I think, would have plenty of opportunities to do big time NIL with a guy like Dillingham because he does have the name recognition. And I think that's probably the case for Isaiah Collier too. It would be easier with Collier, quite frankly, on the NIL front, if like Duke and Kentucky were trying to grab him or something.
Right.
That's the oddity here. Obviously Kentucky's already played for Dillingham. I don't know what it's going to be like on the NIL front. I know there's going to be offers available. I don't know though, is there going to be a company like Beats that steps up and says, hey, look, we'll give you $3 million for 2 years at USC. I don't know, but I do know that there are options. And I think part of the options might even involve like, you know, a lot of the money is kind of probably being reserved for football, at least that's the intent. So you may need a situation where Andy's like going, hey, what about us? You know, you guys got all this money sitting on the sideline. Let's come up with a, you know, I can't be involved, but you guys really should come up with a clever way of getting an ideal NIL deal involved to the extent that it doesn't violate NCAA rules. So anyway, that's just kind of like where we are with NIL. I could definitely see we're going to have problems on NIL for basketball if it's like some random guy who's like good, but nobody, he has like no local name recognition. But we may be able to make up for that if the player does have local name recognition, if that makes sense.
And I think the problem is too, right? Like the guys who have name recognition are the one and dones, right? And then it becomes like, you want to build your program around, you know, solely one and dones. Like, I think the thing with Julian Phillips, right? If he's a one and done, goes to Tennessee for 1 year. I don't know what his NIL deal is. I know the G League offered him 800. So like you have to presume that Jimmy Haslam or one of the Tennessee boosters outbid that, right? So they're out like $1 million for this kid. He stays there a year and he's not even like an elite player. Like he's a very good player, but like you kind of wonder about the ROI on Julian Phillips.
If yeah.
$1 million for 1 year of college. I mean, that's just,
and that's exactly what I think part of the calculus may have been. If Andy is thinking about jumping in, like don't jump in with him, you know, jump, not that he's, that's not to be smart. I mean, this is the same exact situation we talked about him during the fall, which is, I like him as a player. In fact, he's shown me a lot. I compared him to Nick Young. I thought, oh, this guy's really
an
interesting player, but like his 1 year in college, I'm just telling you, there's going to be like a lot of disappointment. You invest like $1 million on this kid and everyone knows it and he like just flops, like the next kid you want to get $1 million for, that money might not be available.
Right. So like, I think if you're talking about, you know, 2 years of Robert Dillingham, like I think that's a slam dunk, right? You're doing that 10 times out of 10. Right. And then maybe what they're doing is they're like looking ahead to 24 and saying like, okay, if we want to throw $1 million at someone, like they're looking at Isaiah Elohim, they're looking at Victorious Miller, like a top 10 player like that, as opposed to Phillips, right? Like those are the kind of dudes that would make sense to throw $1 million at if they're guaranteed one and dones, because, you know, that they would have the, you know, a very big impact on your program in their 1 year, as opposed to Phillips, who would have an impact, but not a super large impact. But Yeah, like relating this back to Collier, right? Like you mentioned Duke and Kentucky not being involved. To give a little context there, Duke is basically full at guard. They took Caleb Foster. They took Jared McCain out of LA. So they got both those guys at guard. So there's not really room for Collier in their 2023 class. Kentucky, it looks like they're losing DJ Wagner to Louisville. So they're kind of going all in on Dillingham and making him their lead guard. Which doesn't bode well for USC in that recruitment, but it does, you know, take one point guard destination away from Collier and make it less likely they jump in on Collier. So Collier, he's basically looking at Auburn, Alabama, UCLA, USC, Cincinnati, places like that. I just have, so here's my take on that recruitment is I know that Cincinnati, a lot of people behind the scenes consider them the favorite. I just don't really buy it yet. Maybe they end up getting him, but you know, when was the last time Cincinnati got a five-star recruit like in basketball, like ever? I guess the answer is Lance Stephenson, right? Like that was what 10, yeah. 15 years ago.
Yeah, 15
they got
years
Lance Stephenson.
Ago. Yeah,
Mick Cronin got Lance Stephenson, and you know he was not good at Cincinnati, and just kind of you know he didn't do really much there, but it was okay in the NBA for a few years, but. Anyway, I think Isaiah Collier is probably going to come down to UCLA and USC. That's my sense. I think there's a strong LA connection there. I do think that UCLA's brand is still higher than USC's brand, the tradition. I tend to look at actions more than words on this stuff, right? Like Seth Trimble never visited USC in the end, right? Since then, I've really looked at, okay, what are these guys doing as opposed to what they're saying? UCLA got an in-home and we didn't. I think that's significant. Like, I'm not saying it means we're out, but I think that means something. Both schools got official visits, so I think that's a decent sign for both schools in that recruitment. So at the end of the day, I think it probably comes down to, we've got a better depth chart for him than UCLA with the Dylan Andrews thing. I'm sure UCLA is pitching like, oh, you can play point guard and we'll move Dylan off the ball. I don't know how that would fly with Comp and Magic. So that's kind of another angle, but I tend to think it's going to be USC or UCLA. That's my sense of it. Maybe like Alabama or Auburn jumps in with big NIL. He's visited Bama. I don't think he's officially visited Auburn. So that's not a great sign for Auburn. But Bama also has a ton of guards. So I just don't know if there's room there either to throw another guy in there behind Jaden Bradley. That was like a long, just rant about kind of general thoughts about that recruitment. I think it's a winnable recruitment, but I think like you have to take UCLA seriously since they've gotten a visit and they've gotten an in-home.
Right. Now, the in-home thing, I think those are regulated, right? So if you do one now, you might be able to do one more later, and SC's got two more later. I don't know what his timetable is. It's possible we were saving the in-home. I have no idea. I maybe it's possible UCLA want to do an early in-home because they wanted to get that visit lined up and they didn't think otherwise it would be available if they didn't do the in-home first. So the fact we got the official visit is, to me, look, we did an in-home with Julian Phillips right at the end of the process.
Yeah.
The in-homes, they're helpful, but, the official visit
can't make up for $1 million, though.
Right. Exactly. That's true. That's true.
Okay.
So the other guy we're recruiting, that's coming on a visit that we know about is Solomon Ball. We talked about a little bit about him last podcast. I think a really nice EYBL season, and he's kind of blown up because I don't think he was on anybody's like top 100 list prior to the AAU season. So, I mean, I'm not sure how much you've watched him, if you have any, thoughts on him.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of a bigger guard, probably 6'4", 6'5", but plays like he's 6'6". Very good rebounder for his size.
Long wingspan.
Yeah, big wingspan. He kind of fits the, Andy Leonard Hamilton mold of how they look at constructing rosters. So I think it makes sense that they evaluated him and decided to move on him. I would take him. I think that's a good take. you know, the shooting is the big question there. He shot 33% from three, which isn't horrible, but it's definitely seems to be the weak spot of his game. But yeah, interesting piece for sure. I like that they're bringing him on a visit. You know, kind of the polar opposite of like Andrei Stojakovic as a player in a way. But I think both are high major good. And yeah, definitely like they're recruiting him. What do you think, Chase?
Yeah, I like him too. You know, in the, there are universes. I mean, we already have a lot of young players on the team, but there are definitely universes where you, if Stojakovic wanted to come and Ball wanted to come, you could take them both for sure. You know, that's, but he's, look, I think you got to bring a guy like him in if he's interested. He's, to understand like the scoring level here, like he's on one of the top EYBL teams, and EYBL is Nike. So he's on one of the top AU programs. He's, you know, it's close, but he's probably the best player on it. And he's probably been like a top 10 scorer in that Nike AAU league this summer. He shot from really well from three, the first slate of events. And then the second slate of events, he didn't shoot nearly as well. So now he's at exactly 33%, but his inside scoring has continued. And he's, you know, he's a, plays a little bit like for guys who are a little bit older. If you remember Jim Jackson from Ohio State, a little bit similar to him. He actually has a longer wingspan, probably not quite as like good of a shooter as Jackson was, but, you know, just a really, really thick shooting guard who can really probably play bully ball at the college level. So I think for me, he's a big time take if you can get him. All right. Anything else you got on your radar before we move on?
So let's just let's put you on the spot, Chase. Who is going to be in the 2023 class for USC?
Oh gosh. Well, okay. So, I feel apprehensive about picking Collier at this moment. Didn't SC just also offer another point guard recently for 2023? Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe I'm wrong about that. Look, I'm wrong about a lot of stuff. I think there'll be a point guard in the class. I'm not convinced it's going to be Dillingham or Collier, unfortunately. I hope it's a true point guard. I don't think it's going to be AJ Johnson from Taft, just based upon the fact that, you know, we're not really showing any interest, neither is UCLA. So I think there's like something going on there that it's a little hard to figure out. I do like SC's chances a lot with Miranda, Isaiah Miranda, who we've talked about in other podcasts. So I think right now I'm going to go with, this is an eclectic group. I'm going to go with Miranda. I'm going to think three players, Miranda, Solomon Ball, and some sort of guard to be named later. And I'll take Mikey Williams. There we go. There's my third, Mikey Williams.
I love it.
Okay, what's your pick for the 2023 class?
Yeah, I like the Solomon Ball pick. I'm gonna go with that as well. I think we're his first visit.
He visited UConn.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah, that seems to be our biggest competition for them.
Yeah, I think we can beat out UConn. I do, for a player like that. So maybe I'm wrong against UConn, but I think the Solomon Ball pick's a good pick. I will go with Miranda's tough. Okay, here's my concern about Miranda is that why hasn't he committed yet, right? So there's that. And then he did the in-home with LSU after Will Wade got fired with Matt McMahon. And that makes me nervous because LSU has miraculously like kind of survived as a program, rebuilding this roster despite everybody leaving. And it's because of NIL. So they got this kid, Tyrell Ward, who is a Xavier decommit top 50 recruit out of nowhere, goes to LSU. So their boosters are big in NIL. And if Miranda's taking that meeting, I mean, I'm sure they were discussing NIL figures with him. Whereas like with us, like, you know, clearly like we didn't have the NIL to step up with Phillips. So I think we could easily get outbid for Miranda with a school like LSU.
They're probably going to have to rein it in now, right? With these new NCAA regs coming through. Right?
Maybe. Yeah. that's definitely a possibility, right? So like maybe, you know, that this is the end of like Phillips might have been the last guy, right? In the like, you know,
yeah,
near future that's going to get the NIL stuff. So, and just checking on it, you are correct. We offered Xavier Brown as a point guard from Pennsylvania, who is a 3-star, 6'1" point guard, class of 2023. So I think that's a bad sign with the Isaiah Collier recruitment. If we're offering him, I don't think it means we're done in that recruitment, but I don't know if I like the way that's trending. So I guess I'll go with Solomon Ball, Xavier Brown, and Isaiah Miranda as my three.
All right. All right. So you're picking Xavier Brown over Mikey Williams. I mean, that's
Mikey's a great pick, man. I mean, I don't know how you can not go with Mikey, but I guess I'll not go with Mikey. But
well, it's so interesting. The great position SC will be in is that since we haven't recruited point guard for like 10 years, we can tell Mikey Williams, hey, you can play point guard. And
there it is.
You know,
there it is. Just give him the keys, right?
Yep.
Mike, just live and die with Mikey Williams, late clock, fade away, right. Two footers. So
exactly.
It's going to be great.
Exactly. Okay. Well, look, we'll try to do, I know I said this last time, but we more seriously, we'll try to do a follow-up podcast here in short a period of time rather than waiting another 3 weeks or whatever it was. And maybe we'll talk about some football too. Football is getting all kinds of players committed. And, you know, I'll take a look at some film. Maybe Nick and I can talk a little bit about that for players we think, you know, interesting at least to talk about. Yes. And you got anything else, Nick?
I think that's it. We'll both be tracking this AAU stuff as it continues and see if anybody else jumps out and, you know, continue to discuss recruiting and all that. But always fun hopping on. And I think we covered a lot today even though there's not too much news. So I think we did all right. So
All right. Until next time, everyone, fight on.
Yeah, fight on.